Welcome to The Art Scene, presented each week by UALR's College of Arts, Humanities and Social Sciences and UALR Public Radio. Arthur Miller wrote more plays than many realize, I for one. His first in 1944, the last in 1979. But of them all, the one considered his most impressive, arguably the greatest American play, is Death of a Salesman, for which he won the 1949 Pulitzer Prize. The Arkansas Rep production opens this week, and the role of Willie Loman is in the hands of Robert Walden, well-known actor in a long career of successful appearances on television and in the movies. All the President's Men, Lou Grant, and currently happily divorced. Arkansas is now his base, living on Pettigean Mountain, where his wife, Christy Carpenter, is director of the Winthrop Rockefeller Institute. Robert Walden met Bob Hupp, Rep's producing artistic director, at the end of the 2010-11 season. Clearly kindred spirits, and about a year ago, after the 2012-13 season had been announced, he was with Claire, Bob Hupp's fiancée, and asked who would be playing Willie Loman. And he takes it from there.
And she said, well, that hasn't been cast yet. She said, but we just got back from New York and saw the production. And I said, good? And she said, oh, yeah, really, really liked it. I said, it was wonderful. I said, were they a little young? And she said, that's what Bob and I thought. And as we were leaving, Bob said, wouldn't Robert Walden be terrific in this role? But he's doing the television series, so that's out of the question. And then I said to her, I said, well, actually, I'll be in hiatus at that stage of the game. So I actually am free. And she said, would you consider it? I said, I'm open to considering it if Bob's interested. So she texted him right there, and she came back with her phone and showed me his reaction.
Which was?
C-O-O-L with an exclamation point. Cool.
Cool.
That was his reaction. Cool with an exclamation point. So I immediately booked a flight this was on a Saturday night. I was in New York Monday and trying to get tickets for the final week to see if I could climb that mountain. Because it is Kilimanjaro. It is Everest. That role is the American Lear is how it's been described.
Oh, really?
In a naturalistic way. Yes. It is not just emotionally demanding. It's about 600 cues back and forth through it and speeches. And it has to fly.
Yeah.
It has to fly.
I was looking it up. I've got the Oxford Companion to American Literature. So I looked him up. And it listed his plays, of course. And that this was the most significant of all the plays he wrote.
He being Arthur Miller.
Arthur Miller, yeah. Of course, yes. And he wrote quite a few.
Yeah.
But only about five, six are still in the, what you might call, the regular schedule of being done from time to time.
That's correct.
And this, probably the most. All My Sons, I think, is probably done quite frequently.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, A View from the Bridge was made into an opera by William Balcombe for the Chicago Lyric Opera. It was Robert Ward who set The Crucible to music. And he said that Arthur Miller told him that he had made the play much better by setting it to music.
Wow. This is an opera without music. That's what this is. I said that to Bob. This is an opera without music to carry you along. That's the size of the emotions. That's the intensity of the story. I don't know, my favorite anecdote that I've heard Arthur Miller say about the play, and he said many, is that when he directed a production in Beijing in the 90s, he was in the back of the theater watching the audience reaction. It was a communist country and all that. And this place, takes a view of capitalism and the definition of success and possessions and leaving things to your children and stuff like that. And a Chinese man was coming up the aisle and saw him and recognized him from the picture in the paper and came up to him, and this is not pejorative, but this is the only way to express the Chinese man. He go, how you know about my family? And that's when Arthur Miller knew it was as universal as it could be. And there's always a production going on of Death of a Salesman everywhere, anywhere in the world at any given moment. There is a production of it.
Whether it's to students who've never seen it before or read it before, to those who go time and time again whenever it's being shown in their vicinity.
I think it's the greatest American play. And I've taught, you know, I'm a professor, an adjunct professor of drama and acting at New School University in New York City and also here at University of Central Arkansas in Conway. So I love theater. It's my church in many ways. And I know it. I love it. I've studied it my whole life. And I am appreciating the extraordinary ambition and success this play is.
Is this the first time you've played Willie Roman?
Oh, yes. That's why I'm so nervous, just the words alone. And the emotional demands of it are, and it's so compelling, it's like you have to ride yourself like a jockey would ride a racehorse to make sure you don't open up the jets too soon and don't have enough for the finish.
How well actually do you know the play until you started seriously reading it, knowing you were going to be projecting the personality of the principal character and the surroundings? And in that article, very nice article, incidentally, that was high profile.
I was impressed. I think it's the best article ever done in all the interviews I've done in my career.
Well, I read it and thought to myself, this is just bringing out the meat of what you've done in a way that you're comfortable with. And I don't go to the movies much. I don't, hardly ever, in fact. Television is not on my widescreen because I don't have one. I remember watching Lou Grant, but the only one I can remember from that is Ed Asner.
Not Nancy Marchand, the owner of the paper?
Yes, but not as distinctively.
Okay.
And all the ones you mentioned that you went to with your father, I knew all those, Abbott and Costello and those... Because that's what the only visual entertainment we any of us had in those days.
Yeah, it was the last vestiges of vaudeville, live performers, and you got a chance to see him in New York. But you touched on a fascinating, interesting area of how familiar was I with the play prior to this. And this is a play that has been chasing me for decades now. George C. Scott, one of the great stage actors of all time, of any century, frankly, offered me the part of Howard, which is the gentleman who fires him. It's a one scene, but it's a harrowing scene. Twice, two different productions. When I was in Los Angeles, and he was doing it once in Philadelphia, then Lincoln Center and Circle in the Square. And I was young. My circumstances were of such a nature I had to earn a living and so on. And I read the play, and I just didn't think that I could listen to this play 8 times a week without wanting to do what Willie does. It was just haunting. So I said no. Then one of my close friends, a soul sister of mine, one of the great acting coaches in America, Sandra Seacat, she's coached Oscar winners, Jessica Lange and Mickey Rourke and Laura Dern and on and on. She asked me to do a reading of it. Now, this is a year ago, April, with a young man who was going to do it on Broadway, Andrew Garfield. And he did, Biff, on Broadway. And I had to keep it quiet that there was a production brewing because it wasn't announced yet. And I read through the play as Willie with her just before I went back to New York. And that was when the first time in my life I ever thought I could do Willie. It was such an experience working with Andrew, that final scene between them. I just got totally carried away. I was into it, and I couldn't sleep on the plane back. It was a red-eye flight. I could not sleep. Mm-hmm. And then when this came up, the synchronicity of it all was just... At this stage of my life.
Serendipitous.
Serendipity, synchronicity, the whole thing. At this point in my life, I just have made I've made a decision. Go with the flow. Don't fight the current. It's one time through. So what have I got to lose? Go for it.
So my question now then, Robert, now that you are into it, studying it, reading it, taking it into yourself, so that, as you say in the course of that article in the Hope High Profile, that you don't ever read what you're going to do to somebody. You have to act it so that the person who's watching sees it from your point of view, rather than taking internally in their own imagination from the words you are saying. So what you're doing is both when you're on stage, isn't it?
Well, let me just clarify a little bit what you said, that you're just about on it. It's when working with a director and you want to show him something or you want to try something, or her, don't tell them what it is you'd like to do, because then they'll see it through their imagination. If you show them what you want to do, demonstrate it, go through it for them right in front of them, they'll see it through your imagination and your eyes. That's what Strasberg told me.
But I was, when I read that, I thought to myself, but somehow that is instinctive to the human race. If you're in a conversation with somebody, you and I just now, your hands are out, you're beginning to mold what you're saying in words to convince me that you know what it is you want me to know from what you've just said. There is an ability, a desire, when we're convinced about something, to involve the people we're talking to with gestures, with movement,
exactly,
with expression.
Especially if you're ethnic, of any ethnic background. But there's an interesting exercise that I've seen done at the Actor's Studio and in other classes, and I've tried with certain people, which is tie their hands to their body and have them try to communicate to you. And what happens often is the voice and the face become so much more expressive because everything is filtered up through that. So it's interesting for it's a great exercise for camera.
And some people have those kind of faces that you don't realize when you're seeing them in the whole person on the stage, that it's the face and the expressions that's leading the rest of the body and the interpretation and the projection of the personality that you're inhabiting.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Have you found, now that you are deeply into it, that your approach is changing from what you thought it would be when you wanted to start?
Well, you have to understand it's only 1 week. It feels like a month. Because the first week of rehearsal was so intense.
When you knew you were going to do this, how far ahead of time did you pick up a copy if you already had one?
Oh, I knew because, at a certain age, short-term memory is really difficult. I mean, I remember my scenes with George C. Scott in Hospital from 1971, word for word. But now I had to jump on it. I have another soul sister who is a brilliant coach and teacher named Joan Darling. She broke the glass ceiling for female directors in television. And so I went out to Kennebunkport and spent 3 days with her just before Thanksgiving, and then met my wife Christy in New York in Thanksgiving. She was already down there. So we spent 3 days going over the play, just reading it and talking about how to approach it. I got some wonderful tips from Joan, a way to structure going about working on it. And then she gave me the name of a very good friend of hers in Los Angeles. I was still shooting the television series Happily Divorced, which I'm still in, thank goodness. And I worked with this woman on starting to get the lines down, getting a jump on the words. It's helped. It's helped enormously. I could not have managed to digest the words if I started just even a month ago.
Is it at all like anything else you've ever done?
No. No. It is the most demanding. It is the most intense. It's like a marathon. It's like a marathon, and it's just 26 miles. It's what it feels like.
So during these weeks of rehearsal before the first night, is that preparation? Can you view it as something that's going to add a little bit more each day, each minute that you're on stage with the other people and getting their feedback, and all of you are coming together as a unit in the cast as people in that story rather than actors putting out this classical play that so many have never seen before?
Such a great question, Anne. That's what we've been doing. I went with Bob Hupp to New York to help cast. I wanted him to see me, if he was open to it, with the people, and then see what he felt was the best makeup of the family. Because that's the core of the play, those four people. The two sons, the wife, and Willie. And he said that he had more people trying to audition for this play than any other play ever in the years he's been around, other than a musical. And we got a great cast. And Bob is a terrific director. The group is a great group. And that is essential, I think, for a journey like this.
That was Robert Walden, who takes on the role of Willie Loman in Arkansas Rep's production of Arthur Miller's Death of a Salesman, which opens officially with champagne reception on Friday, April the 26th, on Rep's main stage in Little Rock. For tickets, call 501-866-THE-REP or visit online therep.org.
Here's a look at what's happening in the arts in Arkansas. This afternoon at UALR, the Theater Arts and Dance Department presents Body Works 2013, this year's spring dance concert. 2:30 p.m. at the UALR Center for Performing Arts. Today is the last day for the exhibits Wendy Mariama, Executive Order 9066, and Edward Weston, Leaves of Grass, at the Arkansas Arts Center. While you're there, you can also enjoy the 52nd Young Arkansas Artists Exhibition. Thursday in Conway, the Hendricks College Choir presents Music for Royal Occasions, Four Centuries of British Music, 7:30 p.m. at Green Chapel on the Hendricks College campus. Friday, organist Daryl Robinson performs at the Cathedral of St. Andrew in Little Rock at 8 p.m. It's the 10th annual recital celebrating the life of Robert Young Ellis, sponsored by the Central Arkansas chapter of the American Guild of Organists. The Arkansas Choral Society's spring concert will be Friday at Christ the King Church in Little Rock. The Choral Society will be joined by the University of Arkansas at Monticello Concert and Chamber Choirs and members of the Arkansas Symphony to perform a Mozart montage starting at 7:30. Opening Friday at the Arkansas Art Center's Children's Theater, James and the Giant Peach shows each weekend through May 12th. This weekend at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville, Green Day's Broadway-style musical American Idiot shows on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Saturday at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale, Arkansas Winds Community Concert Band performs with mezzo-soprano Carmen Sanders, 7:30 p.m. And Saturday at UALR, the 8th annual finale performance with dance selections from the musical Chicago, 6:30 p.m. at Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall. And that's a look at the arts calendar for this week. For more on what's going on in Arkansas, visit our online calendar at ualrpublicradio.org.
The Thayer Foundation is becoming a name to conjure with. Founded by Paul and Linda Leopoulos following the tragic death of their daughter Thea 11 years ago. Her junior year in high school saw such a transformation in her attitude to learning after classes in music theater and art, her parents felt that her legacy should be the opportunity for students to find the same inspiration sadly lacking in much junior high and high school curricula. The foundation, now based in Argenta, the Arts District on Main Street and its environs in North Little Rock, last year initiated a one-day arts festival. Its success made it the first annual. So on Saturday, April the 27th, the second annual Thea Arts Festival takes over six blocks on North Little Rock's Main Street. And my guest, Nick Leopoulos, Associate Director and Festival Coordinator, fills in some details.
The idea of the festival sort of grew from an idea that the board and the staff sort of had collectively, that we wanted to have a fundraiser that really spoke to the mission of the foundation. And while we aren't necessarily, our mission isn't targeted towards creating events like festivals, we just felt as though offering an opportunity for everyone in Central Arkansas or the state, if they would like to travel down to North Little Rock, could see some of the most amazing works that Arkansas artists have to offer. We have many artists in our festival that have work in the Smithsonian, and it's just not in front of individuals' faces, and so they're unaware of such things, and we love to bring that to the greater community as a whole.
Is that sprung from Paul's connections with so many parts of the state now with his art in public schools?
Paul's reach and the contacts that he has gathered over the past 11 years is great for certain. We have some wonderful board members that also make that opportunity possible to have those connections with artists from all the corners of the state. They respect greatly and deeply respect our board members because of who they are as individuals and the reasons why they serve on the Thea board. So we're operating off of a great amount of goodwill. And it's wonderful to see them want to participate in something of this nature. We're new, and there's a lot of buy-in that has to happen on their end, a lot of trust. And we're just so deeply grateful that they would want to travel down for a day to show their works in front of an Arkansas crowd.
Are other things going on in that area in Argenta that can feed off or feed into the festival feeling and the fact that the festival is maybe the anchor of whatever it is that the others seem to want to be part of?
We very much fit into a community fabric that is Argenta. And we are lucky to be in such a wonderful place. The community as a whole has embraced us, the Thea Foundation, I know, and it's very much a community thing. And so because our event is relatively brand new, we try and fit into the greater schedule that Argenta has with all of their events that take place during the springtime. We are the only arts-related festival of our type to happen in Argenta at that point in time. We get great residual crowds from the farmers market, which is now running. Has been for a week, I believe, in Argenta. We do feed off of a great sort of collective strolling crowd that tends to visit Argenta because of all the beautiful tulips that we have downtown and just the wonderful setting that is Argenta.
I know that the market, the organic supermarket, as it were, has also a restaurant or bistro attached to it, doesn't it?
Yes,
sort of people can take a break of being able to sit down and have a little something. Now, is that the only one other than Starving Artist that offers refreshment and the cafe type strolling along the sidewalks that makes it the whole thing become more of a unified enjoyment?
For the festival, I know we have from 6th Street down to Broadway blocked off, so that it's very pedestrian friendly. The trolley car still is going to roll through, and we had great responses from crowds coming from Little Rock and just enjoying themselves in Argenta. Starving Artist did great business last year in response to the crowds that came down. The other restaurants, we are actively seeking participation from them. They always have something new and fresh to offer. We don't try to detract from the business that is in Argenta, so we'd like to keep it local and always ask that they participate any way that they can just to provide services to the public that are walking up and down the street. So I think there are going to be some new stands out on the sidewalk, and we'll see what happens this year.
What variety of art will there be coming? I can see painting, sculpture, woodwork, other crafts, weaving. What sort of connections have you made with some of these other wonderful quilt makers? And do you have art like that on exhibit as well in this festival?
We send out our notice through many channels. The Arts Council is one of them, and they're a great help, a great resource, because they are in connection with a lot of the craft artisans that are around the state and really kind of flung afar. We don't have any fabrics, per se, that are artisans that are going to be in the festival. We do have other wonderful craftspeople. Leon Niehues is a sterling example of that, and his baskets that he weaves out of young birch trees, just to name one artist.
And he's a major winner in the national.
He is on the national stage. Mm-hmm. He is an award-winning artist, and he actually is one of the individuals that I make mention of being in the Smithsonian. And there are wonderful works, and he had a great response last year as well. We also have Wynn Brule, who is a printmaker from UALR, a printmaker professor. I absolutely love his work as well, being a printmaker myself, and love to see his reduction cuts and lino cuts. And he's going to be a new face at the festival this year.
Tell me a little bit about Matt McLeod. He's a painter, an artist?
He is. Matt McLeod is a fantastic painter.
He did that illustration that's part of your publicity this year, isn't
it? He was very gracious in wanting to create an image solely for the festival. We were so excited. We actually sought him out to be the sort of the representative of this year's festival. And he's a dear friend of the foundation and knows Paul. And he has dedicated countless hours of time to that, both that piece and to being around and or answering the questions that we may have for him.
Will and he have a separate booth to himself?
He will. He will have a booth on the street, and he will also be exhibiting his works in the foundation's gallery. So he will have two very prominent places. And that painting of Main Street of last year's festival is actually for sale, and he has promised a part of the proceeds to go to the foundation should it sell.
Has he done any prints of it? Because it's really a most attractive painting.
He hasn't done any prints. We are really trying to sell it as a one-off piece. It is an amazing work to see his use of color. Mm-hmm. I know many people are just so attracted to and pulled towards. I do use his work on every single part of promotional material that we have, so I'm hoping he's okay with that. I asked him and cleared it with him, I think, initially. But it is everywhere. So if somebody wanted to grab a slice of it, they could certainly pull a poster or a postcard. So.
Where is he from in the state?
Matt McLeod is central. He is in Hillcrest, and his studio is in Hillcrest. But he sells his work nationally, so he is well respected across the nation.
Have you increased the size of the festival at all in terms of the number of blocks, or is it the same amount with a few more stalls closer together?
We had close to 24 artists last year. We have upped that number to around 35 this year. The way we position our artists on Main Street, we try not to close down too many blocks. We have to have permission from the city, naturally, and the city is above and beyond excited about the festival to come to town every spring. We hope to grow it into a multi-block thing. Hopefully, maybe we can shut down all of Main Street. We would love to have that kind of response from artists and from the public to come out and see some amazing work.
So you mentioned the trolley. Many people that you're hoping to come. Mm. Parking could be a problem otherwise.
It could be a problem. All the surface parking is going to be open that day. But yes, the trolley is running. It's going to be full service. Individuals could board the trolley in Little Rock and take it right across the Scott Street Bridge. And it will circulate until, I believe, they close it around 9:45 or 10 o'clock at night.
And opens, what, 8 o'clock in the morning?
I believe so. I'm not quite sure. But we did receive a decent amount of our traffic from the trolleys, actually, last year. So that was a wonderful way to be able to open up, keep the street opened up enough for the trolley to actually make its runs through downtown and get to experience the festival in a whole new way. Yeah.
Would there still be possibilities for another artist or more artists to call you to say they'd like to join, or have you sold out most of the spaces now?
We try and get all of our spaces sold for the festival pretty early on. It is the logistics of the thing. And so we are full, but we've had great responses from quite a few artists, and we hate to turn anybody away, naturally. Just that's the bleeding heart of a nonprofit. So, but we do encourage them to always follow the festival. We'll have a separate website, or we do have a separate website set up, theaartsfestival.org. They can keep track of everything that's going on. It'll be a pre-festival, post-festival, any kind of information, new things coming for next year. It's going to be a great resource for all artists to keep track of dates and sign up and applications and things.
Yeah, nature, right. So. The festival will open at 8? What are the hours of the festival will be on?
We are officially opening at 9 o'clock Saturday, April 27th. And we will go till about 5 o'clock in the evening.
And most of the artwork on view is on sale?
Every piece of work is on sale, and we take no commission from the artists. They deal directly with the client on the street. We pride ourselves in offering that opportunity to the artists, is that they will take 100% of their commission.
Nick Leopoulos is Associate Director and Event Coordinator for the Thea Foundation's second annual Thea Arts Festival, which is planned for April 27th on Argenta's Main Street in North Little Rock. Juried artists will have booths along the street, musicians, artist demonstrations, and more can be found on the website Thea Arts, that's THEARTS festival.org. And that concludes this week's program. Please join us next weekend at the same time. I'm Ann Nicholson. Thank you for listening.
The Art Scene is a presentation of UALR's College of Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences and UALR Public Radio.